Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Hyperconscious Podcast. Alan, what is Hyperconscious?
Once you understand why something is the way that it is, now you have the power to change it. Great conversations with great people and great questions are the keys to the kingdom of unlocking your consciousness.
Every single action that you do starts as a thought. When you control the way you think, you will control the way you act, and you will control the way you live. That is hyperconscious. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another very special, as always, episode of the Hyperconscious Podcast. We hope you enjoyed our latest Scratching the Surface episode where we talked all about the journey versus existence. Today we have a very special episode featuring Spike Spencer. He is Kimberly Spencer, who we had last week on Sunday, her husband. He is a world-famous voice actor, real estate investor, and relationship coach. We actually talked mostly about relationship stuff. We were scratching our own itch, and it was a next level episode.
Quick friendly reminder, as you expected, to go to the hyperconsciouspodcast.com, click on join our mailing list. Folks, if you have not gotten those morning minutes, you are not kickstarting your days off as well as you could. As you know, the only way your life gets better is if you get better first. Let us help you do that.
Yes, the mailing list is filling up. We appreciate you guys, and we enjoy sending those off and recording them. They're very fun to record. So if this episode is great for you if you are in a relationship, if you're going to be in a relationship, or if you have ever had one that has failed, this is the episode for you, and we hope you will enjoy.
Talk to you soon.
Bye.
No. Geographically.
This is cool. So I would say make sure that pretty face is showing.
Yes, true.
They're going to want to see that thing. They're going to want to see that f***ing thing, Alan. That f***ing face. You good?
Ready.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another very special, as always, episode of the Hyperconscious Podcast. Today's guest is a coach, a public speaker, a real estate investor, a voice actor, devoted father, and he is also a barbecue aficionado. I promise that will tie in towards the end. We are sitting down with the one and only Spike Spencer. How are you doing, my friend?
I am extraordinary. How are you?
We are living the dream. We're very excited to sit down with you. We were lucky enough to sit down a podcast with your wife, Kim, last week.
Yep.
And now we get to sit down and chat with you.
Well, that's awesome. I'm excited, guys. Thanks so much for having me.
Absolutely. So what we like to do is just have you tell the listeners a little bit about yourself, a little bit about your story, and then we'll get into the questions that we have to dig deeper. So who is Spike Spencer?
Okay, well, I guess my tagline is, I talk goofy for a living, seriously. And, you know, I'll make it as short as I can, but as in-depth as possible. I've been an actor and a voice actor for over 30 years. I live in Burbank now, so I've been in Hollywood in the last 14. And that is a crazy, crazy way to make a living, and it's a lot of fun. And that's just part of it. I started off as an actor, and I went into real estate investment in Houston, where I was born and raised and spent all my life until 14 years ago. And when I was there, I started doing real estate, started flipping houses, and I flipped about 60 properties personally. And things were going all right. I had about 15 properties I was holding on to, had a big old house, 4,000 square foot with a dojo and a pub with on an acre and a quarter with three dogs, Nacho, Fajita, and Burrito. So, you know, life was going pretty well, I thought. I had a beautiful wife and a great relationship. And, you know, everything was going along. And my acting career was picking up. I had had scenes with four Academy Award nominees, two of them winners, up to that point. This is up until 2005. And I had just finished filming 5 weeks with Frank Langella on a Disney film called Now You See It. And I thought things were going well, but then things started to get messy in the real estate business, and it was getting more difficult. And I didn't realize what was happening in the personal side. So the reason I'm going into this personal side is because that's what catapulted me in deeper to the self-improvement and dating and relationships. Mm. So things went south in a hurry. And if anyone out there has ever dealt with heartbreak, it happens in an instant. It's a snap. And suddenly your life changes. That's what happened to me. To get down and dirty, my ex-wife had an affair with my best friend. And I lost literally everything over the course of, literally in a day. But the end run took a couple of months. And then I moved to LA and left everything I had and everyone I knew and loved for the most part. So it was a whole readjustment into a new life. And I moved to Los Angeles. So that being the basis for where I started on the dating and relationships, because I had thought I was doing really well with dating and relationships, and I had a cold slap in the face. So I started over and started studying everything I could. I was, you know, I read The Game. I was doing pickup. I was dealing with dating with Double Your Dating with, you know, Dave D'Angelo, who was actually Evan Pagan. And I had always been doing the self-improvement things all of my life. I mean, even before I was married, I was a bartender. I was like Tom Cruise in Cocktail. I was the bartender with all the self-help books, you know, behind the thing. So I'd sling the things. When I had time to sit down, I'd reading about, you know, investing and all that. So when I basically went out to LA and had to start over, I had two choices. I said I could either give up and, you know, basically die, or become the best version of me as I possibly can. And I decided on the latter, thank goodness. Mm. You know, to be honest, I almost attempted suicide. I had a loaded snub nose 38 to my temple, and I was squeezing the trigger, and something said, don't do it, you're better. And I just went, okay. So I said, all right, I'm going to do something different than that. And everything changed. So I started down the path and just learning everything I could about relationships, psychology, dating, pickup, you name it. I was learning about being the best husband, lover, father, friend, man I could possibly be, devouring things. And that just led me on a path for about 7 years. And so long story medium, I guess that's kind of that's the basis for where everything came from. So whenever somebody says, oh, really, what do you know? I'm like, everything.
I'm glad you went there, because so I was going to ask you about the time where you had the gun up against your temple, and I'm glad you already touched on that, because I wanted to bring that. I think we all have that rock bottom moment, and in that rock bottom moment, you get to decide, is this going to be my identity forever? Is this going to be the end of my life? Is this going to be the beginning of my new life? So I was going to go there anyway. I appreciate you going there, and I'm glad you're still here, because Alan and I are lucky enough to have you on a mastermind call now, and your positive energy is just radiant. You can tell the second you get on the phone, it's all positive. So we're very excited for this.
Oh, thank you, man. I appreciate that.
Absolutely.
I mean, and it takes work, I gotta tell you.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, and that's what we're here for. That's why I think why you guys are here, why I'm here, why we do what we do, because we know we can help.
Yeah. I want to touch on your past a little bit more, maybe like it's an earlier in your past, but I read on one of your websites that when you were in sixth grade, you were taking candy bars into school and selling them for profit?
Mm-hmm. I was an entrepreneur from day one, man. I did all the things you do as a kid. You lemonade stand. I used to make sandwiches. I did beach jewelry, anything I could think of. Never made it a real business until the sixth grade. And it's funny because it started, my cousin did the BMX bikes, you know, not just, you know, racing.
Yeah.
And I went to one of those things and I got all these free stickers. Like, these are the coolest things ever. And people are like going, hey, I'll buy that from you. And a light went off. So, you know, next thing I know, I've got like 50 stickers. I've got them, you know, laminated in between, got in a folder with, so I could just flip through them and go, okay, these on this page are $1. These on this page, $3, you know. And I sold all of those and took that money. I said, okay, now I'm going to invest in something else. And I said, candy. So I found candy for 10 cents. I sold it for 50 cents. Mm. I mean, that's a hell of a markup for a kid.
Hustling.
Yeah. And when it was all out of a, you know, my backpack or a paper bag or whatever, and the teachers didn't care that much until, unless I was disrupting class, they took it away from me. And I was like, oh no, I went to the store and got more and came back the next day. Boom.
Spike, so you've clearly always had kind of this self-starter mindset and big dreams, and you kind of mentioned that in the story. I kind of want to go a little bit deep here. In that moment when you could have, you had that decision to end it or to keep going, I have this quote that I've started to live by. I think when we're in deep emotional trauma and pain, we can either slip into a vice or develop a virtue. And I truly have come to believe that the people who choose the vice are the people who have a belief in their own ability to create a bright future for themselves and others. Hindsight's 2020, right? So looking back on that moment now, and it's probably hard to go there.
Oh, I'm sorry. Like, may I clarify something right quick?
Absolutely.
You just said those that choose the vice or the virtue?
The virtue. So those that choose the virtue, it usually have a stronger level of belief in their own brain.
Right.
Future.
Okay. I just wasn't sure because you said vice. And I
Did I?
Oh, I think that's a misquote.
Yeah, oh, that's no my problem. Bad. No, I'm glad you did that because I may have misspoke. I do it. I do
often.
It often. Yeah. Fail forward. But yeah. So going back to that moment, you obviously have a lot of belief in yourself. You know, therefore you take a lot of action. You said you've always been into personal development. You were the bartender with all those books. In hindsight, going back to that moment, you know, what do you think it was that made you decide to be your superhero self instead of ending it?
Well, let me clarify something, and I think this would be helpful for people who are struggling out there. I made a decision, but the decision was immediate, but the turn took years, and I hit the vices hard. I was basically drunk for 2 years. You know, but it wasn't like I was just a raging alcoholic. I was working and everything. But at the end of the day, I was by myself. And I love drinking wine, and I drank a crap load of it. I mean, my blood type was Merlot. It was ridiculous. And I just said, you know, I'm trying to get better, but the nights were hard. And so anybody that's out there is struggling, I want to say, you know what? I want you to know if you're not succeeding the way you think you should be, if you're hurting and you're in pain and all that, it's part of the process. Because that was the thing. I was like, this is supposed to be easier. This should be easier. I should it all over myself. That's not true. You cannot go above. You cannot go around. You have to go through. And I went through. And sometimes it's hard. Sometimes it's bumpy. Sometimes it's ugly. Sometimes you have to do stupid things. Sometimes you do things that you didn't even know you could. But when you know what's on the other side, you believe that faith that somewhere on the other side, it can be better. And there's a better version of yourself on the other side. Then it gives you the will to go forward. Because when you fall backwards, if you fall backwards and you don't have that, any dream, any hope moving forward, then that's when people get stuck in the vices and they can't get out and they feel they're hopeless. Once they make that decision, you know what? I may be where I am right now. This may be ugly. This may suck. But you know what? Tomorrow's different. I'm not going to stay here. And that's what was resonating in my head, even at my worst moments. I'm like, I feel terrible. I look terrible. I'm not having a good time and everything. But I said, you know what? I know I will not stay here. And that decision, I think, is the key for most people. And I think they don't forgive themselves for being where they are. Like they should be further along faster, you know, and I think that's a mistake.
Spike, to connect that, so one of your goals and something I read on your website is if I can help you avoid going through the tragedy that I did, I win. When did you really lock that in after the dust cleared and settled a little bit and you realized, okay, I have this unique experience, I have this trauma and this very close to a life-ending tragedy, and now I'm going to use that to better people?
Yeah, it's odd, and this takes me on another side tangent with the voice acting, because when I moved out to LA, I had no idea what I was going to do. But, you know, I, as you know, Kim and I, we're quite the manifestors, and I've always believed in that. You know, you manifest good or bad, and it's a skill like anything else. And I said, I have to get clear on what I want. You know, when I was in my vice phase for a little while, I said, you know what, I've got to do better. What can I do? What do I really, really want to do with my life? And that's one of the first things I'll ask people when I'm coaching, what do you want? And you'd be amazed what happens. So I had to get clear. I got clear and I said, I want to travel the world. I want to eat great food and I want to party my ass off. And I talked to my friend. I said, that's what I want to do. She goes, oh, well, why don't you go appear at conventions? You're famous, you know. I was like, you know, I had the Scooby-Doo moment. I was like, what are you talking about? And she says, well, you know, we did all this anime. I've dubbed anime into English for 25 years. And she said, there are conventions all over the world that you can go to. Just reach out and look them up. And so I said, okay. So I got my business brain back on. I said, okay, I'll go. And I started getting booked at all these places. I was like, oh, my God, they'll pay for me to fly out there, pay the hotel. They'll feed me. I get signed autographs. I get paid for signed autographs sometimes. I mean, it was like, whoa, this is insane. And I just went ballistic for a few years there. And 1 year I did 8 countries and 25 cities. And I was like, wait a minute, I can do good. You know, finally, after my party phase was out, I finally said, you know what, I can do good. And I developed panels. So one was a voiceover panel. One was the short stories, what happens at the con stays at the con, crazy things that happen at conventions. And I made them into short stories, some of which I instigated, by the way. and then it happened one day I was fully into learning how to be pick up and a better guy and just be a more attractive man. And I saw these guys doing a panel about, you know, how to pick up women, how to talk to women or something like that. And I listened to them like going, dude, you guys are doing everything wrong. You're going to get these guys killed. Mm-hmm. And I just said, okay, I'm going to develop my own. And that's where Don't Kill Your Date and Other Cooking Tips was developed. I started doing it at conventions. So I've been doing it in front of thousands of men. And as I was doing it, originally, I was like, you know what? Let's be honest. I just want to get laid. But then I was like, you know what? I want to help these guys. I really can. What I'm saying is really helping, because people would come up to me afterwards. And they'd be like, dude, what you told me there, I'm going to use. And this is great. And couples would come up and say, you just saved our marriage, man. Do you know that? I'm like, no. Okay, that's awesome. And I'm thinking, wow, I actually do know what I'm talking about. I actually can help people. And it felt right. Everything was in sync when I started doing it that way. Mm-hmm. And I've been developing it ever since and strengthening it and coming up with relationship sales dynamics and putting everything together. And if I can help somebody avoid what I went through, not only does that I win, yes, but they win because they don't have to suffer. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing we do with self-improvement. You know, we read a book about somebody who's done what we've done, what we want to do. And so we don't have to go through all those ridiculous things. It shortens the learning curve. And I think that's wonderful for relationships.
So one of the things that I really want to bring to the listeners that you originally said is that you start with all your clients with what do they want. And
yeah.
As you know, clarity is power. I often say this on the podcast and to my clients as well. Like, if you don't know what you want, you'll never know what you're shooting for. You can't hit a target you don't have. And by the way, even if you did hit the target, you wouldn't even know that you hit it. So you're always going to feel like you're drifting around.
Exactly.
And the thing that's crazy about the story you just told is that as soon as you asked yourself the question, what do I want? And you said those things, now all of a sudden someone came to you and an opportunity literally appeared seemingly out of thin air that was always there, but you never connected that it was there because you weren't clear on what you wanted.
Exactly.
With the con thing. So that's one thing I wanted to bring. When it comes to some of the relationship dynamics stuff, when it comes to intimacy and that kind of thing, I was listening to a speech earlier. And you said, and I quote, everybody comes up to you and says, what do I have to do? What do I have to say to be more attractive to the opposite sex? And you said, and I quote, it is not what you have to do or what you have to say. It's who you have to become. You have to change from the inside first. Now, I think that's super powerful. Can you elaborate on what that means to you at this point?
Absolutely. Now, I know since you talked to Kim, you know our background with neurolinguistic programming.
Yes.
And the bank code and high performance. So there's an idea that is a tenet of NLP, which is perception is projection. And people listening will understand you are going to attract where you are. And you can generate everything you need from within. But like anything else, it's a skill. It's a muscle. It has to, you have to do it every day. And it's not easy. It's not easy at all. And when you become the right person, things will open up that you didn't even expect. And it's amazing because in my trainings, in my learnings, and dealing with women, tons of failures, lots and lots of failures, just stupid ass mistakes that I would make. Some of which, many of which, let's be honest, were involved alcohol. So, you know, you pull back on that and a lot of things get clear, but you still say stupid stuff as a human being. Mm. And everything gets, you know, misinterpreted. But when you get inside and you really feel it, like one day it actually clicked. And I was like, I got this. I understand this relationship thing. And my dating changed. Everything changed. And I was like going, wow, I just – and in that moment, what I call it is that I just became bulletproof. And that's amazing. It's an amazing place to be. When you get to that point where it doesn't matter what anybody says or does because it's how you react. Somebody says something to you and you suddenly react. You go, wait a minute. What am I thinking? Because – they just did whatever they did. Like people say, oh, it's a trigger word. No, it's a word. It's what you do with it that matters. So why am I reacting this way? Why am I doing what I'm doing? When you take that moment to actually question that, your life turns. Because most people don't question that. Most people react.
Spike, do you think, well, you've been in the industry, the television and that kind of industry. Do you think that that sets a bad precedent for relationships and the way... I remember growing up, I would see, you know, a man get rejected by a woman on TV, and then he would throw some rocks at her window. You know, they'd get married, they'd have kids, everything would be all, you know, fine and dandy. But when we see those things, I think that people tend to try to recreate what they see on television and movies. Do you think that helps or hurts men when they're trying to facilitate a new relationship?
Oh, it smacks men right in the jubblies. Oh, boy. Okay, here we go. You hit a hot button with me, man.
I was hoping.
Go.
So here's
Kevin's
the
good
thing.
At that.
Yeah, I mean, the deal is, if you look at a sitcom, look at any sitcom, mm-hmm. pick any sitcom, mm-hmm. what are you going to have? Well, you're going to have a dumbass man who, you know, it's always that, wah, wah, oh, honey, come bail me out. And then the woman comes and bails him out. And ends up kind of looking like a stone cold bitch after a while. You're like, why do they love each other? Because she doesn't like him. Every day, all she does is put him down and save his butt. And he's a moron. And, oh, but it's so funny. And I'm like, you know, that is why I don't really watch TV. Because I started watching that. And I've written articles about this. And it's like, that is just reinforcing a stereotype that is just ridiculous. And it's not helping anything because a lot of the research I did, when I call it field research, is, you know, whenever I was dating women, I dated a lot of women. And whether it was, you know, if anything happened or not, we had a great conversation. And I would always ask them, I said, you know, what's going on? What are you thinking? What do you look for in men? And et cetera. And the overriding thing was, where are the men? Mm. And I was like, huh, I didn't get that. And I think, wait a minute, you know what? Since the 70s, when things started happening where it's like, you know, and this, I don't want to get political, but, you know, women's power got bigger and bigger and bigger, which is awesome. I love it. I love powerful women, you know. And I think that's an amazing thing. But what has happened is guys didn't know how to react. And guys have tried. The only thing guys want to do is make women happy. That's pretty much it. So, but most guys think, oh, well, I have to be subservient. That's the exact opposite of what a woman wants. And so that's what's been happening. But guys are like, well, but I gave her this and I did this and I, you know, all of these things. And yet she goes off with this, you know, bad boy who treats her like crap. You go, what am I missing here? Well, that's what's been happening is guys have been told that if they just do enough, do whatever she says and make, you know, bring her flowers and all of this, that it'll be great. Well, partially that is true. Partially, that is exactly the opposite of what you want to do. So when I see all of this being reinforced, it's like, oh, what are they doing to men? And the women hate it too. That's the thing. We can laugh at it all day long, but the women are like, this is reinforcing something that I don't want. And it's a shame.
That is unbelievably powerful. I'm glad you went there. And kudos to you, Kevin, for going down
I knew it would get them going.
Because it's crazy. Like, we're constantly seeing shiny objects, but we're not shown the process by which is required of us to achieve it. And so, Spike, like you mentioned to the guys that come up to you and say, what do I have to say? What do I have to do? It's not necessarily what you have to say and do. It's who you have to become as a man. And I think maybe we're missing the link between how do they become that man? Because I think you have to have a reason first. And that's why I think falling in love is so wonderful, because there's your reason. When you have someone that you genuinely desire in your heart like so much, I feel like you have a stronger incentive to improve than prior to meeting that person. What can you say to someone out there who has fallen in love, gotten their heart broken, and really wants to figure this thing out like you? When you had a moment where you basically said it just clicked for you. I genuinely feel like it took me 29 and a half years to get to that point where I understood intimacy and relationship dynamics. Now, don't get me wrong. Mistakes are proof you're trying. I will make many more. There's no doubt about it. I'm not going to stop learning. But I do feel like I understand finally how to communicate with the feminine energy. So what can you tell someone out there who's a man who's been struggling in this arena, who maybe has been subservient was the word you used, and how they can really take their masculine power and use it in a warm way that the feminine energy will actually be attracted to?
Absolutely. Well, the thing is, whenever you're dealing with the masculine and feminine energy, it's like my wife will tell me, she's like, you have undoubtedly, you are alpha. You are strong, but not in an arrogant way. Mm. And that I also am very much in touch with my feminine side, because women keep reaching out to me to be on their podcasts and talk to women. And that's what brings me to another book that I'm going to be working on later. But the point is, when a guy needs to get to where he can understand all of this, you said a very powerful two words: feminine energy. Guys don't know what the hell that is, and they're like, you know, most guys that are out there are not going to take the time to do the work it takes to develop themselves. Mm-hmm. For example, every time I would do these panels internationally, didn't matter where I was, I would say something about a guy like, you know, you need to make a decision. You know, if you have you've got to do this, or here's how you treat her. You know, you say this or you do that, whatever it was that I would say that women would be, you know, shaking their heads up and down, and the guys would be sitting like, no, no, I got it. And then they would look at the guys and they would shake their head no to to me. They're like, no, he doesn't have it. And guys think they do. Mm. And I think there's an arrogance that comes from insecurity, because or ignorance, actually, because a lot of guys think, oh, no, I got it, I'm good. Well, that is the kiss of death, because I can say I got it, I'm good all day long. I'm still going to work. I'm a student from day one. Mm-hmm. I'm always a student. I will always be a student. And if you don't have that, there's a very good chance that you're going to get stagnant, and no woman wants a stagnant man. Mm-hmm. I'm going a little off topic here, but I can do this for hours. I get so excited about this stuff. But for guys to get where they need to be, they have to read. They have to make the decision to improve themselves. It's Kaizen. It's one of the chapters of my book. Kaizen, you know, Tony Robbins calls it constant and never-ending improvement. It is a very, very strong and solid way of being, because you cannot lose with it. Mm-hmm. If you want to be a better man, that is your choice. But then you have to take action. And as soon as you take that first step, that first action, you open a book and start reading, you are already on the path. You have already improved yourself. You cannot fail. You are improving. You read two words and that say, I am, doesn't matter. Wherever you're going, you are on the path. And that is incredibly powerful. And once you get past all of the other things you have to get past, which is, you know, forgiving yourself, getting back out there, I call it growing my balls back, that sort of thing. You know, once you get past all of that, you start to go introspective. And when you start to question how you're being, how you're thinking about things, if a woman says no to you and it just crumples you, you're like, whoa, 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 where did that come from? That's just a decision she made. I'm a great guy. I'm just not her cookie. You know, I'm not her flavor of cookie. So it's there's so many variables that go into it, but it really comes from real, honest introspection on who you are as a man and taking the step to improve that. Once you take the step, you're already improving.
So Spike, We have, as much as I want to continue asking about men, because I am one and I want to use all this knowledge, we have a lot of listeners that are women. Alan and I both have clients that we coach, and most of them are women. And I have heard so many horror stories regarding the way they were treated and what, you know, all that shit that I don't even like talking about. But what advice can you give women when it comes to relationships? Say they have a boyfriend or a husband or a fiance who is stubborn, who has that arrogance to them and is struggling to take constructive feedback. What would you say to them? Because I think up until recently, I really struggled with that. I thought I knew what I was talking about. I thought that I had the answers to everything, and I don't. And I learned through personal development, 100%. So if a woman is in that, you know, in that part in her life where the person that she's with is struggling to take feedback, how what advice would you give to her?
Well, it's interesting because you can't, men are, you know, men are strong, men are virile, vigorous, potent, you know, but we're also weak as hell when it comes to our women sometimes. You know, I tell Kim, nobody in this world can hurt me except possibly Kim. That's it, you know, and that's, did you know that when a woman scorns you or turns you down, it activates the same centers in the brain as actual physical pain?
Yes.
Yeah, I read that recently. There's a book. Yeah. What book is that from? I just read it not long ago.
I forgot who it was, but it's true, and I've felt that pain many times. Every man has. And it's an interesting thing that when women want to, I've had many women say, can you help him? I'm like, no, he has to ask me. He has to come to me. So a woman pushing the man to be a better man is not going to work, because you can't fix him because he ain't broke. He's different. You see, learning all of the NLP and the bank codes and all of that, now it's whenever something happens, when there's a dynamic in between a man and a woman, I can look at what's going on now and say, oh, okay, you're acting this way because she's doing this, and her love language is this, so yours is this. So when she does this, this hurts you there, and that. It's just seeing the matrix and becoming Sherlock Holmes. And the more, as a woman, it's more difficult to tell a man what to do. So you have to go at it from a standpoint of, and I hate to say it, but as dealing with a child. How would you deal with a child? You would say, oh, this is what I will put up with. This is what I will not. This is what I would like you to do. So positive reinforcement leads them towards that. You can't tell them what you're doing. You can't say, oh, you've got to go do this. I want you to do this. And you know, that's, that becomes the nagging. And that is automatically going to get you at loggerheads. You know, you're going to get a pushback immediately. But if when he does something that you really approve of, and there's praise, there's love, there's smiles, there's touching, he's going to do that again, you know? And that there's a way to lead him to that. You can be on your own journey as well and say, hey, listen, here's what I found. If you, it depends on the dynamic of the relationship here. Now, if you're dealing with somebody who is really struggling with insecurity, then that you might need some professional therapy. And those guys are going to be hard to get into therapy. So it's, I mean, that's something that's more outside of my realm because I'm not a therapist. I can do timeline therapy, which can help couples, certainly. But there's a different dynamic that if it goes in too deep, then I'm like, that gets into a different area that I don't want to go into. But the baseline is we treat people how to treat us. And watching dynamics of couples and listening to how they communicate is extraordinary because they're in it, they can't see it. When you're outside of it and you watch it unfold and you kind of see the matrix, you go, oh, okay, I know what to do, how to guide and coach, but they have to do the work, as you guys know. I mean, you coach and they've got to do the work. You can't do it for them.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Yep.
Yeah. So you can encourage. That's the best thing you can possibly do is encourage. And understand, you're both on a trajectory. If he has ceased to improve himself and you continue to improve yourself, there is going to be a dynamic there that is not going to work. He is going to have to keep improving himself. Otherwise, this is a doomed relationship. because if you're not both improving, one stagnates, the other keeps going, there will be resentment, there will be tension, and there will just generally unhappiness. And I don't ever want to counsel anybody to break up, but sometimes, for the good of everybody involved, you have to go your way.
Ladies and gentlemen, we hope you are enjoying this episode where Alan and I were lucky enough to sit down and interview Mr. Spike Spencer. I wanted to talk to you today about the 20-minute phone calls that I've been doing with our listeners. Number one, we have the best listeners in the world.
Oh, yeah.
Number two, I'm so grateful to be able to reach out and talk to you guys, because the better that Alan and I are able to connect with you, the better that we can cater the content. Our main focus is to help you guys with the things that you're going through.
The listens have been going through the roof, and we know that that is predicated on how much we are adding value to your lives. Please keep reaching out to Kevin and myself via DM. These 20-minute calls, if you're out there thinking to yourself that it's intimidating to talk to Kevin, trust me, he is not intimidating at all. He's going to be warm, and he is soft as puppy shit.
Not very nice. I have nothing but love for you guys, and I look forward to talking to you. So DM me at NeverQuitKid, and I will call you.
Talk to you soon.
Bye. Real quick.
Yeah.
Before Alan asks his question, Spike, I think I heard you on one of your speeches say that they're able to predict with accuracy that if there's resentment in the relationship, the chances of divorce are like a percentage higher. Do you know what I'm talking about at all? Because I don't.
I'm not sure where I might have said that. If I did, I do know that. Yes, resentment is yep. really rough.
So,
because that's something that people carry for a long time, and women tend to carry it longer than men. A lot of the things that you hear that are kind of funny, oh, she'll remember that forever. Well, it's funny because it's true, and it's not a good thing. It's not a bad thing. It's a thing.
So there's a lot of books that I've been reading. One is called The Female Brain and one is called The Male Brain. And one of the things that I find most fascinating in our culture today is that we try to treat everything like it's the exact same, but biochemically and structurally, the brains are very different. And, the hormones are different, obviously testosterone versus estrogen, and I don't want to go too deep down that rabbit hole, but I do want to make it clear that the masculine energy and the feminine energy are different, and they're not supposed to be the same. And I think that obviously there needs to be some core values that are similar in order for any sort of long-term sustained passion and intimacy, and love to be there. But one of the things that I wanted to talk to you about, and by the way, I think it was Blink by Malcolm Gladwell, where they put couples in a room. And one of the things for the listeners that Spike said that really jumped off the page is it's hard to see the whole picture when you're in the frame. One of the best things about being a coach is that you create so many new distinctions by seeing yourself in someone else's position, and your genuine desire to serve them and help them will serve you so much. So if you have friends out there that are coming to you and asking for help because you have results that they don't, whether it be in fitness or relationship or anything, remember that being there for them is going to help you learn so much more than you would if you weren't trying to serve them. So that's one thing I wanted to bring to the listeners. The other thing...
That's a great point.
Thank you. Thank you, Spike. I appreciate that. So on Blink, Malcolm Gladwell said there was a study done that they could watch a couple, I believe it was for up to 30 seconds on video, and they could see that if the number of positive associations to each other or positive interactions versus negative was 5 to 1, they could predict with 90% accuracy that that couple within 10 years would not be divorced. And they actually followed up and did these numbers. Now, for those out there who don't understand what an association is, I want to actually get Spike's perspective on this. So I wrote earlier something you said in a speech. You said, have you ever been in a conversation or in a sales presentation when everything's going great, and then suddenly you see the other person's eyes glaze over? Now, if you're a man out there or a woman, you've probably been there where all of a sudden you lost the other person. And then you said this, and I quote, "You know that you just lost that sale. You hit a tripwire, a negative trigger." Now, for the sales piece, we're all selling something, whether it's an idea of which movie to go see tonight, or just a principle or a philosophy. So if you're communicating with someone else, you are in sales to some extent. Spike, what did you mean by a tripwire?
Well, I'll tell you one side note there. If people say, "Oh, I'm not in sales, I don't like sales," okay, fine. Use influence.
Exactly. Positive influence.
Use influence. And I also think maybe When you said Blink by Gladwell, I think, was it that or was it influenced by Cialdini? Where they had that. I'm not sure.
Anyway. I read both of those books.
Because I remember I read that study. Yeah, I read that too. I was like, oh, yeah, I remember that.
For the listeners, Cialdini, Influence, that book is one of the most incredible books I've ever read. Definitely.
Oh, it's great.
Top 25 for sure.
Yeah, it's really great. You'll probably have to read it 2 or 3 times. Just,
yes.
Trust me.
I'm still going on.
Yeah. I'm like, I'm going to go at it again. So, a negative trigger or tripwire. Mm-hmm. We know there are like there's over like 300 of these in the sales process, and it's the sales process. Excuse me, is the same as the dating process. Like I'll say, there are dating techniques, there are sales techniques that you're going to use in dating, and there are dating techniques that you use in sales because it's all mixed. It's all about influence. And when you are saying something that does not work with the other person, this really gets into the bank code personality typing system. If you say something that does not jibe with that person's outlook.
Oh, yeah. Been there.
Then
been there.
They literally cannot hear you.
Yep.
They don't understand the language that you're speaking. And I can go really in the weeds with that, but that's a whole different thing. But the point is, when that happens, this is what emotional intelligence will get you. This is what your EQ kicks in. And you see that and you go, okay, quick, I need to get it back. What did I say? What was it? And if you know what it was and you say, oh, I said something that was very high knowledge or very high nurturing, so therefore, oh, they must not be one of those two things, or their blueprint, or this, or action. Whatever it was, you need to have more tools in your tool belt so that when there's a trigger, you can get it back and you go, oh, they don't understand the language that I'm speaking. Well, let me switch over to, you know, Spanish, and I'll speak Spanish, you know, and then, oh, that's not working, so I'll switch over and speak French, which is, you know, obviously you're not going to speak those things, but if you are... If you are speaking their language, for example, if I'm talking to, let's say, now Alan, I think you were a high action. Was that correct?
And high knowledge for sure.
Right. See, yeah. I am the same way. So with you, I know what to speak about. There's high action. There's a lot of freedom and action and blah, blah, blah. And there's also knowledge, which is let's get some facts. Let's get to mastery. Let's get in there. Those two things, actually, I was talking with one of my coaches about the dynamic is very interesting for those, but we'll get into that offline. But if I come at you and I say, oh, listen, you know, I want these 5 things in order done at exactly the right time, and then your brain's starting to go,
yeah,
I don't care. Yeah. Give me the flash, you know, right. Give me the cool stuff. And that means that I'm speaking a different language. Mm. And, you know, it goes with there's so many different languages that we speak. Like I said on my – I think it's like my first thing on my LinkedIn. It says, look, miscommunication is simply missed communication.
I'm looking at a flashcard with that right now. I have that written
down.
There you go. You're ruining my next question, Spike.
Oh,
no, go ahead. You're good.
Let me answer
it's your
question.
LinkedIn. Yeah.
See, everybody tells you what they want and need, but they do it in their language. So you have to learn to speak their language. That's what your best salespeople or your best, like, you know, pickup artists or guys who date a lot of women, they all speak the language. Now, some of them do it naturally. And you say, hey, how do you do that? They're like, I don't know. I just do it. Great. Good for you. Now, do you know anybody that does it that has written a book on how to do it so I can start learning that way? And then somebody else writes a book that's similar but only different. Okay, now I'll read that one. So you start learning all of these clues and cues. And so when something happens and those eyes glaze over, you can get it back because you go, okay, what I was talking about was in this language, which was action, but that was knowledge for them. So I'm going to switch over and talk about knowledge. Or, you know, whatever the other language is. I know this is into the weeds for a lot of people, but the bottom line is when that happens, you're not speaking their language. They don't understand you.
Spike, we've been fortunate enough to have some of the most successful entrepreneurs and people that played in the NFL and so many people on here. And we've asked them, what do you think the key to success is? And, you know, we get consistency or discipline or perseverance, whatever it may be. If you could only take 3 words to sum up how to have a successful relationship, and I know it's probably, you know, it's hard because everybody's a little bit different, but if you could just give 3 words to sum up a successful relationship, what would those 3 words be?
Communication, listening, decision.
Decision. Interesting. I thought you were going to go with trust. Decision, why? I'm curious, super curious.
Decision is a huge factor, especially with men and women. Let me put it this way. Stick with the dating thing for a while. When it's a very funny thing. When I always tell guys, I say, make a decision. This is huge. And women start shaking their heads. And I go on to demonstrate. I say, well, let's say, how many times have you been in this scenario? So where do you want to go to dinner tonight? I don't know, honey. I don't know where you want to go. You know, it's like, I don't know. Where do you want to go? I don't know. Back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. So you're like, okay, what is happening with this dynamic? It's very, very simple. She wants you to make a decision. Mm. So because leaders make decisions. Mm-hmm. And when you make a decision, it ends the discussion and says, all right, now we can do something else. Because this whole back and forth little power play is ridiculous. So make a decision. So you go, okay, honey, we're going to go get some barbecue tonight. It's going to be great. And she's going to say, that sounds great, honey. One, two, three. But you know.
Yep.
And you're like, wait a second. Here it goes. So she gave you like, there's a 3-second pause. And she goes, but you know, sushi would be, there's a really nice place that opened up that says sushi and everything. And now this is where men mess it up. Because they're thinking, okay, I made a decision. I got to stick with my decision to be the man. Well, there's another decision that gets to be made right here. Because if you stick with that decision, you go, no, honey, damn it, I said we're going to get barbecue, and that's what we're going to do. Well, guess what? You're sleeping alone. Because it was a test. Women test you all the time. It's not good or it's not bad. It's just the way the world works. And so if you say, you know what, honey, I really wanted some barbecue, but that sushi sounds good. Let's make a deal. We'll go get some sushi, and next time we'll go get some barbecue. How's that sound? And she's like, yay.
Spike,
and it's awesome.
Can you specify the test, I think, is usually trying to make sure you care about them. They want you to show them that you care about them, and they want to feel loved. Is that what you meant by the test?
I can actually put it in a more succinct way.
Please.
That one of my mentors said. He said, look, a woman will test you, and she's waiting for you to make a decision. She's waiting for you to man up, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And sometimes this gets into the point of where it's a fight. It's like, you know, why do you keep pushing my buttons? Why do you keep messing with me? Why do you keep pushing me? And a woman said this to the therapist or the coach. She said, if you don't stand up to me, then how will you stand up for me?
Mm, powerful.
And I thought that was huge.
Yeah.
So she wants you to make a decision. Now, if you make a wrong one, she's going to let you know, and it's fine. Because in that moment, it's just saying, look, I want you to just do this, make a decision. You know, Kim and I do this all the time. If I'm being indecisive, she goes, decision. I'm like, oh, boom, got it.
Love it.
I'm on. Ha ha. And then she tells me what she really wants to do. I'm like, why didn't you just tell me what you wanted to do in the first place?
Exactly.
It's fun. It's a silly little kind of game, but it's huge. Decision is huge because it goes over to business and life. Mm. Leaders make decisions quickly, and then they will reroute if need be, but the decision has to be made. That wishy-washy in-between seesaw area is not good for anyone, any relationship, any business. Something has to be done, and then you can react and, you know, tweak from there.
So Kevin just asked you a question that made me want to ask a different one, but very similar. So in your perception at this point, similar, yeah. Guy called
himself
a speaker. Yeah, you can see why I'm not as successful as you, Spike. One thing I want to bring to the listeners is that your communication skills with other human beings and with yourself is probably, in my opinion, the greatest determining factor of your long-term success. Now, that's a bold statement. Spike, what do you think are the three words, not just in relationships, but in life, that you'd attribute to what you referred to earlier as manifesting? In other words, getting clear on what you want and then obtaining it, or at least making progress toward it.
Well, the three words really summed up in the relationship sales dynamics. It's clear, connect, close. And what I teach in that is real simple, clear. Like you said earlier, you know, you have to be clear on what you want. That's great. And you absolutely do. You have to know your endpoint in order to get there. But there's another aspect of clear that I also use. So that's clear is that's clarity. But I use clear as in clearing, which is you have to clear the past away. You have to clear out your unconscious, everything that is fighting you at every turn. And we don't realize how much junk is in there. That's why that the first thing that I do with any of my clients is we're going in timeline therapy. We're going to go in and we are going to clear crap out, and your brain is, we're just going to, oh, you're going to be so clear that when you actually get all the junk cleared, it's like when your head is all stuffy and you can't breathe and you don't really want to think and you just want to lie down and sleep. Your unconscious is like that a lot and you don't realize it. And you need to, well, kind of you need to blow your unconscious nose. it just hit me. I'm like, oh, wow, that's kind of nasty.
Blake, what's a practical way to do that for our listeners? Like, what's a practical way that they can start to, like, forgive the past and still learn from it, though?
Well, there's a way. There's some simple ways to do it, but it's not always effective in the long term because they're just there. You've got to go deep into it. Mm-hmm. But there are, it's really vision. Understand that your mind does not know the difference between what is real and imagined. Mm-hmm. This is proven. Neuroscientist like Joe Dispenza, mm-hmm. I highly recommend his work. And it's amazing because usually when we get up, we're dealing with like 90% of the same thoughts we had yesterday, every day. Mm-hmm. You think about 90% of the same crap. And once you start to see the matrix in your own mind, you go, okay, what am I thinking about? What am I really thinking about? And what am I saying to myself? Listen to the words you say. Listen to the things that you say. Listen to what you're doing. If you say, I don't know if I can do this, what have you already told yourself?
You can't.
You know, you're already telling yourself no. And once you start understanding what you're saying and what you're thinking, you're like, oh, wow, I'm at the 40,000 foot level. I can look down and say, oh, that person just made a decision. Wait a second. He wants to go this way, but he's turning that way. Well, that doesn't make any sense. And that person is you. And you tell yourself, oh, hey, self, that's not right. Think this. Has anybody ever done this? Yes. You can too. Woohoo! It's a different way of looking at it. That's very, very simplified, but it really comes down to personal, taking the time to question yourself, because we don't usually do that.
Spike, that is how the Hyperconscious podcast and the Hyperconscious mindset was born. I wanted to know if I could change the way I was thinking, and here we are a year and a half later. So we're coming up on an hour, and I want to make sure that you get to plug your stuff at the end. So Alan and I have two questions that we ask every guest, every guest. My question is different than Alan's. Alan's is a little bit, I think, maybe deeper. I'm not really sure. But I think that, you know, we all have this time on the earth, and some of us choose to live it in different ways. And eventually we are going to leave this earth behind and go on to whatever is after this. But what do you hope to accomplish with your time on earth before you leave it behind?
I want to bring laughter to millions. That's one thing. And I've wanted to do that all my life. And I thought it was going to be through TV, maybe a sitcom or, you know, stand-up comedy or something along that line. But then it went a little deeper. I want to bring laughter and joy and peace, because that comes from inside. And now that I've looked inside deeper and understand, when you have that joy that you can feel in your heart, it's a happiness. There is laughter, because I do it in a funny way with goofy voices and funny stories and all of that, because it should all be fun. If you're not having fun in personal development, then what the hell are you doing? Mm-hmm. You know? So I say, if you're not laughing, you're not living. So I want to bring laughter and, you know, inspiration to millions through my work.
Love it. That is an awesome answer. So there is one question that I ask every guest, but real quick before I do that, super, super fast here. You have over 195 credits on IMDb as a voiceover actor. Now, I really like to pull back the curtain on some of the stuff. Like, we all see cartoons, we play video games, or we have at least at some point, and there's, you know, voices behind those characters. There's voices behind that TV show or that video game. But I often say this, there's a lot going on behind the scenes that we would just never know looking from the surface. So one example of this is I'm a men's physique competitor. And one of the things that I like to tell people is you don't realize this, but if you look good backstage, you're going to lose on stage. You would never know that unless you were a competitor, because if you look healthy backstage, you're not lean enough to look good on stage. Now, what is something similar to that in voiceover acting that no one would ever know unless they were, you know, in the industry for as long as you've been?
Yeah. Interesting. I didn't know that. That's cool. Well, from a voice standpoint, I just tell people, they say, you know, you're so, it's not voice acting. It's not just because you can make a goofy voice. That's not where it's at. It's actual acting, especially in video games. You have to be a good actor. And think about it this way. You have to be such a good actor that they can't even see your face. Mm. They can't see what you're feeling. You don't have, they don't have your eyes to look at. You have to feel everything on a deep, deep level in the voiceover. Now, when you're the voice of a, you know, a ridiculous cat or something, you may not get into it all that deep, but there's a lot of acting, voice acting that is, that goes very, very deep, especially in your video games. Or, you know, it has to be real. And a good director is going to bring that out of you. So it's not voice acting, it's acting. And I think that's something that a lot of people don't quite get. Also, it's very difficult to scream your head off for 4 hours straight. I'm just going to throw that out there.
I just want to say you probably have a very developed skill, as you put earlier, because it's not easy to vividly imagine. You said that you know, the brain cannot tell the difference between that which you vividly imagine and that which is real, your pineal gland. That's the imagination, the center brain. That's why when you go into a float tank, you shut off your central nervous system, all of your five senses are gone, you can access that. And obviously there's other drugs and stuff that can help you do that. I don't recommend any of that nonsense, but what I'm saying is that I think, Spike, your ability to manifest is probably partially because you've had to imagine so many things and develop that skill. Now to my last question. I wear a necklace or chain, depending on how you want to look at it, around my neck with a true north, the North Star, on it. It's the brightest star in the sky. It's always there. It's unwavering. It's constant. It's a guide for people. I believe we grow, we change, we evolve. But I do believe there are parts of us that are never born and never die. That's my own spiritual belief. What about you? Never changed.
I've always believed that I could be my best self. And I've always strived for that. And I, you know, even now, I mean, I still, it's like Ed Milet calls it blissful dissatisfaction. You know, it's like I am thrilled and I am grateful every day in my gratitude exercises for all that I have and everything that I have. And I am also completely dissatisfied because I have so much more to do and I haven't even scratched the surface. And that's, I've always known that. I've always felt that. And I didn't really put it together until recently. It's like, oh, that's what it is. You know, and it's not that you're going to be dissatisfied with what you have. It's a very specific way. And that's why I said Ed Milet, because some people say, well, then you're never going to be satisfied. It's like, no, I am very satisfied in certain areas, but I'm also not satisfied in others, you know, and that is the ability to continue to learn, because I'm never going to learn everything I need to learn. And that's wonderful. I love that.
That's an incredible answer. Before this podcast, Kevin and I, we've had a lot of, it's been a rough road to say the least. And I'm going to let him plug in 2 seconds.
Yeah,
Kevin's kind of like, wrap it up here, Alan.
Yeah.
I basically said to him, everything's going incredible in my life right now, and I'm super grateful for that. But I said that you're happy, and I'm happy, and everything's headed in the right direction. I said, it feels a little complacent, man. I'm like, this feels weird. And what I said to him, I'm like, this complacency thing? Not for me. I told him specifically, I said, I have to go find failure. I'm not stretching enough. But I'm with you 100% blissful dissatisfaction. I've never heard it said that way before, but it makes perfect sense because I feel that too, for sure.
Well, and that's something we always try to impart on the listeners. Like, I want you to be happy with what you're doing, but I also want you to have this desire, the deep desire to know that you can do better and you can accomplish more. And it's just this fine line. All right, so Spike, when I introduced you, I said that you were a barbecue aficionado, and I said,
yeah,
I promise it'll come back and we'll be able to touch on that. Can you tell us more about everything that you have going on, your coaching, Don't Kill Your Date and other cooking tips, and all of that happy jazz? Plug everything you have going on, my friend.
Boom, let's go. All right. So I have a book that is coming out in April. It's called Food Game, A Man's Ultimate Recipe for Dating Success. And it is all about how it's the concept of food game that I developed. This is what I teach in the Don't Kill Your Date and Other Cooking Tips panels, which I've been doing for about 14 years. And you can find out all about that on my website, don'tkillyourdate.com. And for the women that are listening, I have a really great podcast that I did for a virtual summit for You Asked, Good Men Answered. I was the key speaker of the virtual summit, and it's about an hour and a half, and it really gets into the dating and the men and women dynamic, because we only touched on a little bit here, and it is really great, and it's free. So go to don'tkillyourdate.com and just download and listen up. It's really, really nice. I'm very, very proud of it. So there's that. There's spikespencer.com, but that's more on the business side. So my like speaking demos are there, and that's where my audio, my cartoons and animation demos are there as well. They're a lot of fun. I highly recommend you go have a listen. I've done a lot of silly crap in my life. That's really pretty much it. I'm working on, for the guys out there, Food Game. The book is, like I said, it's coming out and it'll be available on Amazon, but I have a Food Game Dating Success Strategies Mastermind group that I'm forming, and it is it's like $29 a month. I tell people, hey, look, for less than dinner out at the Olive Garden, I can teach you how to never take her to the Olive Garden. That kind of thing. It's a lot of fun, and that's mostly it, man. Just look for me. Oh, and check out Netflix, Being Dad. That was me and Kim. They followed us around. The Chicken Soup for the Soul production company followed us around, and you can see my baby being born.
Hell yeah. I wanted to make sure that if you're listening, you know that Spike is very, very good at many things. I know we went very deep on relationships because Alan and I wanted to scratch our own itch, but you are next level when it comes to everything we've heard. We were blown away when we were able to connect with you on that mastermind last week. And the second you started talking, Alan and I knew that we wanted to have you on as a guest because you truly are next level. And we appreciate you sitting down with us, my friend.
Well, thank you so much, guys. I'm excited to learn from you guys as well. And I'm really happy to be in the mastermind and thrilled to be on your podcast. I think you guys are going to do amazing things.
Oh, thank you for saying that, Spike. One last request.
Yes,
here.
Yes.
We wanted to hear some of your coolest voices. What are your favorite voices? On one of your speech. So I watched your speaker reel, and yeah, you go from like all these different ranges of voices all at once. Can you for our listeners and for Kevin and I, I've got a big smile on my face. Give us your best stuff.
Okay. Let's see. Colonel Kled from League of Legends is my favorite, and one of his lines is, "I'm gonna rip out your spine and use it for a back scratcher because my back is empty." Because he's completely nuts. A lot of times I'm talking like little boys, you know, who save the world in a biomechanical robot, you know, that kind of thing. And of course, sometimes I talk like this, you know, if you want to have some fun with different accents and sort of. I've done a lot of different accents, which is so weird. So, but those are some of the fun ones. I usually play like the effeminate little girly boys who save the world in a biomechanical freaking robot or a psychopath.
Well, we're glad Alan and I are cracking up here. I hope the listeners are as well. We appreciate you doing that for us.
What is life?
Yes, it's an interesting road for us all. Spike, anything you want to leave the listeners with before we let you go?
Just, you know, believe in communication and connection, because that's where the superpower lies. If you can connect, you won't get upset. You won't get angry. When you see the Matrix, you go, oh, that's why they did that. That's fascinating. That's it.
Love it.
Absolutely beautiful.
Ladies and gentlemen, we hope you enjoyed this episode as much as we clearly enjoyed recording, and we will talk to you later.
Talk to you soon.
Bye. Ladies and gentlemen, we hope you enjoyed our latest episode where we were lucky enough to chat with Mr. Spike Spencer. Up next, we have a Small Talks episode on the word gratitude. Thank you to Peyton for the suggestion.
Folks, no matter how good or bad, quote unquote, your life is or any challenges you're going through, if you're focusing on the things that you're grateful for, you are going to feel better and therefore do better. That is why I think gratitude is so important. Wake up in the morning and say thank you. Before you go to bed, write down your wins for the day and what you're most grateful for. This episode, I think, is going to be very important.
We have done these episodes in the past, but it's called Practicing Gratitude for a Reason. So you are probably in a different point in your life, as are we. So we are going to practice gratitude for different things, and we hope you will enjoy.
Talk to you soon.
Bye. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so very much for listening to another episode of the Hyperconscious Podcast.
Going hyperconscious will absolutely change your life, because if you understand why something is the way it is, now you have the power to change it. If you going hyperconscious with us has changed your life in any way, please share this episode with one of your friends, because the more people that go hyperconscious, the better this world's going to be for everybody.
And if you would kindly leave us a 5-star review on iTunes, that would help us make more people hyperconscious, and we would be greatly appreciative.
Thank you.
Bye.